All right. So let's dive into insurance.
Okay.
I know it doesn't sound super exciting.
Right.
But honestly, understanding this stuff can be really helpful down the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
And potentially save you a lot of trouble and even money.
For sure.
So, you sent over a bunch of chapters from insurance training manuals.
Yeah.
Pretty ambitious.
It is a lot of material.
It is a lot of material, and that's what we do here on the Deep Dive.
That's right.
We go deep, so you don't have to.
Exactly.
But we're gonna go beyond just the basics today. We're gonna really try to uncover how insurance works.
Okay.
The different players involved, the things to watch out for.
Yeah, like what's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The inner workings of insurance.
Right.
So to kick things off, let's start with the most basic question.
Okay.
What is insurance really?
Okay.
The manuals keep mentioning this idea of transferring risk.
Right.
But I have to admit it's a little abstract for me.
Yeah, it can seem that way, but it's actually simpler than it sounds.
Okay.
So think about driving a car, right?
Yeah.
There's always a risk of an accident.
Of course.
With insurance, you're essentially paying a company to take on that risk for you.
Okay.
You pay a small amount regularly, which is your premium.
Right.
And in exchange, they agree to cover the costs if something bad happens.
Okay, so it's like I'm sharing the burden of that risk.
Yeah, you're transferring the burden.
Okay.
But the insurance company is better equipped to handle it because they have a pool of people sharing that risk.
Right. Yeah, they're spreading it out.
Exactly.
But the manuals also make a distinction between types of risks.
Nah.
Speculative and pure.
Right.
What's the deal with that?
So that's a key point.
Okay.
Insurance only deals with pure risks. Pure risks are situations where there's no possibility of gain, only the potential for loss.
Okay. Yeah.
So think accidents, fires, theft.
Yeah. Things you don't
want
to happen.
Exactly. Things you don't want to happen. Speculative risks, on the other hand, like investing in the stock market or betting on a sports team, those involve the possibility of winning or losing.
Gotcha.
Insurance companies don't deal with those.
Okay.
Because the outcomes are much harder to predict.
So they like to stick with the risks they can calculate.
Yeah, they need to be able to calculate.
Price tag on.
Quantify that risk. Yeah.
It's all about the data. Right.
Exactly. They need data to analyze trends and figure out the likelihood of those events happening.
Right.
That's how they determine the premiums.
And that's where this idea of exposure comes in.
Right, exposure.
Is that like how much time I spend scrolling on social media?
No, not quite.
Okay.
It's about how much you're subject to a particular risk.
Okay.
So, for instance, if you drive a delivery truck for work all day,
right,
your exposure to auto accidents is going to be much higher than someone who works from home and only drives occasionally.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So that difference in exposure is a big factor in how your insurance premium is calculated.
So the more you do something risky, the higher the exposure. The higher the premium.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah. It does make sense.
Okay, good.
But these manuals also use this word peril.
Yeah.
And it always sounds kind of ominous to me.
Yeah.
Like something out of a scary movie.
Right. Like a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
But it's not that spooky.
Okay.
A peril is simply the cause of a loss.
Okay.
So let's stick with the car accident example.
Okay.
If a hailstorm comes through and damages your car.
Right.
Hail would be the peril.
Okay.
Or if someone breaks into your car and steals your stereo.
Right.
Theft is the peril.
Okay.
It's all about what specifically caused that damage or loss.
Okay. So different policies cover different perils.
Exactly.
And the insurance company figures out your risk and exposure to those perils.
Yeah.
To determine your rates.
To determine your premium, exactly.
And that's where underwriting comes in.
Why underwriting?
Which always sounds kind of mysterious to me.
Yeah, it's basically risk assessment.
Okay.
So underwriters look at all sorts of factors to determine how likely you are to file a claim.
Okay.
They might consider your driving history, the type of car you drive, where you live, your age, and even your credit score in some cases.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like they're building a whole profile.
They are. They're building a risk profile.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing that surprised me in these manuals is that not everything is insurable.
Right.
I kind of figured you could insure anything these days.
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
There are specific criteria that risks need to meet to be insurable.
Okay. What are they?
So first, it has to be calculable.
Okay.
Insurance companies rely on data.
Right.
To predict future losses.
Yeah.
So there needs to be enough historical information to figure out the probability of that event happening.
Okay. That makes sense. You can't just pull numbers out of thin air.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What else?
The premium also has to be affordable.
If the cost of transferring the risk is too high,
yeah,
no one's going to buy it.
It defeats the purpose.
Exactly.
Okay.
And finally, the risk needs to be non-catastrophic.
Okay.
So events like widespread natural disasters or wars.
Right.
Those are usually limited in coverage because they can cause massive simultaneous losses.
They can wipe everyone out at the same time.
Exactly. And that makes them really difficult for insurance companies to handle.
Okay. So I probably can't insure my house against a zombie apocalypse then.
Probably not.
Good to know.
But you never know.
Speaking of insurance companies, I always kind of pictured them as this giant monolithic entity.
Right, one big company.
But these manuals mention different types of insurance companies.
Yes, there are different types.
Can you break that down for me?
Absolutely. So you've got stock companies,
okay,
which are owned by stockholders, just like many other businesses.
Okay.
And then you have mutual companies, okay, which are owned by the policyholders themselves.
Wait, so I could actually be like a part owner of the insurance company?
You could be a part owner.
That's interesting.
It is.
What's the benefit of that?
So with mutual companies, any profits that are made after paying out claims and operating expenses
right.
can be returned to the policyholders as dividends.
Oh, so it's like getting a refund for being a good customer.
It's like a reward for not filing claims.
That's pretty cool.
It is a nice perk.
Are there any other types of insurance companies out there?
There are a few more niche players, like fraternal benefit societies, which offer insurance as a benefit of membership.
Oh, okay.
Often with a focus on community and charitable activities.
Gotcha.
You've also got reciprocal insurers.
Okay.
Where a group of individuals or businesses come together to insure each other.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like a cooperative model.
Okay.
And then there's the legendary Lloyd's of London.
Oh, yeah, Lloyd's of London. I've heard of them.
They're famous for insuring all sorts of unusual things, like celebrity body parts.
Wait, hold on. Insuring celebrity body parts?
Yeah. They're known for insuring some pretty unique things.
That's fascinating. We're going to have to come back to that.
We can definitely dive into that later.
Okay. But for now, let's get back to the people that we actually interact with on a regular basis.
Okay.
Insurance agents.
Right. The people on the front lines.
Yeah. What exactly is their role in all of this?
They're like your guides through the insurance world.
Okay.
So agents act as a bridge between you and the insurance company.
Okay.
They explain the different types of coverage.
Right.
They help you find a policy that meets your needs.
Yeah.
And they guide you through the whole process.
But are they really working for me?
That's a good question.
Or are they just trying to sell me the most expensive policy?
Right. It can feel that way sometimes.
Yeah.
That's where the law of agency comes in.
Okay.
Legally, agents represent the insurance company.
Okay.
But they also have what's called a fiduciary responsibility to act in your best interest.
So they can't just push a policy on me that doesn't actually cover what I need.
Exactly. They have a legal and ethical duty to put your needs first.
That's good to know. That's reassuring.
It is an important protection.
Okay, so there are different levels of agent authority.
Yes, there are.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
So there's express authority,
okay,
which is what's specifically laid out in their contract with the insurance company.
Gotcha.
Then there's implied authority,
okay,
which is anything that's reasonably necessary to carry out their express authority.
Okay.
But here's where it can get tricky.
Okay.
There's also apparent authority.
Okay. Apparent authority. What's that?
So let's say an agent promises you a specific type of coverage,
right,
even though it's not actually included in the policy.
Oh.
That could be a case of apparent authority, yeah, where they've given you the impression they have the power to give you that coverage, even if they don't.
And if I file a claim for that?
Yeah, and if you need to file a claim,
I'm in trouble.
You might be in for a surprise when it's denied.
Wow. Okay, so buyer beware.
Exactly. Always read the fine print yourself.
That's a good reminder.
Don't just rely on what the agent tells you.
Yeah, be an informed consumer.
Right, be an informed consumer.
Well, I'm definitely feeling more informed already.
Great.
But before we move on, I'm noticing that these manuals go deep into different types of commercial insurance.
Yes, they do.
It's a little overwhelming, to be honest.
It is a lot to take in.
Maybe we could just take a quick look at some key categories.
Sure, we can do that.
Okay.
Just to get a sense of the scope.
Yeah. Let's see, we've got commercial property insurance.
Yes.
Inland marine insurance.
Right.
Wait, isn't that about boats?
You'd think so, right?
Yeah.
But it's actually about protecting things in transit.
Okay.
Like shipments of goods, computer equipment, valuable papers.
Okay, so anything that's moving around.
Exactly. Think of it as insurance for anything that's on the move.
Okay, that's way more interesting than I thought.
It is a fascinating area.
What else?
We've got equipment breakdown insurance, which covers losses when equipment breaks down.
Okay, that makes sense.
So a critical piece of machinery in a factory malfunctions.
Right.
So it can cover the cost of repairs or replacement.
Okay.
But importantly, it can also cover the lost income while that business is down.
Oh, wow.
So it's not just about fixing the broken thing.
Right.
It's about protecting the business from the financial fallout.
Yeah, the downtime, the lost productivity.
Exactly.
Okay, that's really important.
It is.
What else?
We've got liability insurance.
Yeah.
Which covers situations where you're legally responsible for harm to others or their property.
Right.
This is a big one.
It is a big one.
And it can get pretty complex.
Okay.
With different types of liability to consider.
Yeah, I know liability insurance is important, but honestly, the details always kind of make my head spin.
I understand it can be a lot.
What about crime insurance?
Ah, crime insurance.
I was thinking of that as like for banks and jewelry stores.
A lot of people do.
But it's more than that.
It's much broader than that.
Right.
So it covers a wide range of crimes, including burglary, robbery, employee theft, even computer fraud these days.
Wow. Crime insurance for cybercrime.
It's becoming more and more important.
That's pretty relevant.
It is very relevant.
It seems like there's a specific type of insurance for every possible risk.
There probably is.
Well, this has been a whirlwind tour of insurance basics.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, I'm feeling way more confident already.
That's great to hear.
But now these manuals keep stressing that insurance is a contract.
Right, it is a legal agreement.
And I have to admit, contract law isn't exactly my favorite bedtime reading.
I don't blame you.
But understanding the nature of that contract is important.
It affects your rights and responsibilities.
So tell me about it.
Okay, so it all comes down to the principle of utmost good faith.
Utmost good faith. That sounds pretty serious.
It is a fundamental principle.
Oh.
It means that both you and the insurance company are expected to be completely honest in your dealings.
Oh, so no hiding stuff.
Right. You can't hide information about previous accidents or lie about the value of your possession.
Right. To get a lower premium.
Exactly. And on the flip side, the insurance company can't mislead you about what's covered.
Right.
Or try to get out of paying a legitimate claim.
So honesty is the best policy, literally.
It really is the foundation of the whole system.
Okay, but what happens if someone doesn't act in good faith?
Well, that's where things can get messy.
Okay.
Hiding or misrepresenting facts is called concealment or misrepresentation.
Okay.
And it can void your coverage.
Yikes.
So imagine someone applying for auto insurance.
Right.
But conveniently forgetting to mention that recent speeding ticket.
Oh, that's not going to end well.
It's going to come back to bite them.
Right.
And then there's fraud.
Okay.
Which is intentional deception to gain something of value.
Okay.
People try to stage accidents, inflate claims, or even file claims for events that never happened.
Wow. So insurance is built on trust.
It really is.
And when that trust is broken, the whole system suffers.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm also noticing that the manuals dive deep into the fine print of insurance policies.
Right. All those details.
I'm talking about conditions and exclusions.
Yeah. The devil is in the details, as they say.
Okay. So this is where the real deep dive happens.
This is where it gets really interesting.
Okay. I'm ready. Let's start with deductibles.
All right. Deductibles.
I hear that term all the time.
It's a common one.
But I'm not always sure I understand it.
Well, it's the amount you pay out of pocket before your insurance coverage kicks in.
Okay. So let's say I have a $500 deductible on my car insurance.
All right.
And I get into an accident and the repairs cost $2,000.
Okay.
I pay the first $500.
You pay the first $500.
And my insurance company covers the remaining $1,500.
Exactly.
So a higher deductible means I pay less for my premium.
Generally, yes.
But more if I have to file a claim.
Right. It's a trade-off.
Okay. It's a balancing act.
You're balancing costs and risk. So it's about finding that sweet spot for your budget and your risk tolerance.
Gotcha.
Now, here's where it can get a little tricky.
Okay.
There's also coinsurance.
Oh, yeah. Coinsurance has always confused me.
Okay. Well, coinsurance is a percentage of the property value that you're required to insure to receive full coverage.
Okay. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's use homeowner's insurance as an example.
Okay.
A common rule is the 80% coinsurance clause.
80%.
Okay. So if your home is valued at $200,000.
Okay.
You need to have at least $160,000 of coverage.
To be fully insured.
To be fully insured.
Okay.
If you have less than that and suffer a loss, you'll only receive a portion of the claim payment.
Oh, so it's like a penalty for underinsuring.
It can be seen that way.
Okay. So I need to make sure I have enough coverage to meet that coinsurance requirement.
Absolutely.
Or I could end up paying a lot more than I expect.
That's the risk.
Okay. Are there any other insurance terms lurking in the fine print?
There are a few more, like other insurance, which outlines how policies interact when you have multiple coverages.
So like if I'm in a car accident and I have both auto and health insurance.
Exactly.
Okay.
Those policies will coordinate to determine which one pays first and how much each will cover.
Okay, that sounds complicated.
It can be. And then there's subrogation.
Subrogation, okay.
Which basically means that if someone else causes damage that your insurance company pays for,
right,
they have the right to step into your shoes and try to recover those costs from the at-fault party's insurance.
So they're going after the person who caused the problem.
They're trying to get reimbursed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not just about contracts and fine print.
Right.
I'm noticing that these manuals also mention laws and regulations around insurance.
There are a lot of laws.
It seems like a whole other level of complexity.
There is a whole legal framework.
Okay. Maybe we should save those laws for our next segment.
That's a good idea.
I need a minute to process all of this.
We've covered a lot.
Yeah, we have.
So let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll come back and dive into those laws next time.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, great. Okay, so are we ready to jump back into those insurance laws?
Yeah, let's do it. It's kind of a relief to know that there are actually some rules in place.
Right. It's not just a free-for-all out there.
Yeah, I'm all about consumer protection. So where do we start?
Well, let's talk about the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
The Fair Credit Reporting Act.
This one has a direct impact on your wallet.
Okay. I'm listening.
Because it dictates how insurance companies can use your credit information when they're determining your premiums.
So they're not just checking to see if I pay my bills on time.
Well, they do look at that, but it's more than that.
Okay.
They use it to create what's called an insurance score.
An insurance score.
Which helps them assess your risk.
Okay.
The good news is this act gives you rights.
Okay, that's good.
You have the right to know what's being reported about you. And if you find any errors, you can dispute them.
So I can actually improve my insurance score.
You can, and that can help lower your premiums.
Okay, knowledge is power.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when it comes to your credit.
What other laws should we have on our radar?
Another important one is the Terrorism Risk Insurance Program Reauthorization Act. TRAPRE, exactly. Okay. Remember when we talked about non-catastrophic risks? Well, terrorism is a bit of a unique beast.
Okay, I can see how that would be tough for insurance companies to handle.
It is a huge potential risk.
Yeah.
So TRAPRE essentially creates a safety net.
Okay.
It outlines how terrorism is covered by insurance.
Okay.
And establishes a federal backstop for insurers.
So the government steps in?
The government steps in if there's a major attack.
Okay, so there's a plan in place for the worst case scenario.
There is a plan.
Good to know.
Yeah, it provides some stability.
Any other big ones we should know about?
One that's particularly relevant these days is the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act.
Graham-Leach-Bliley.
Or GLBA.
GLBA.
Okay, this one's all about protecting your personal financial information.
Oh, yeah, data privacy. That's a big one.
It is a huge issue.
Yeah, I'm always a little nervous about all my information floating around out there.
I think we all are.
So what does this act actually do?
It requires financial institutions, including insurance companies, to explain their data sharing practices.
Okay.
And to give you the option to opt out of certain types of sharing.
So I have some control over who has access to my information.
You have more control than you might think.
Okay, so I need to start paying attention to those privacy notices and opt-out forms.
It's a good idea to read the fine print.
Yeah, I usually just click through those without thinking.
Yeah, that's what they're hoping for.
Okay, well, I'm adding review privacy settings to my to-do list.
I think that's a good idea for all of us.
But getting back to the nitty-gritty of insurance policies.
Okay.
We started talking about commercial insurance last time.
We did. There's a lot to cover.
And I have to admit, it can feel a little overwhelming.
It can be. It's a whole other world.
Yeah, maybe we could zoom in on commercial property insurance for a minute.
Sure, let's do that.
Remember, this is all about protecting the business's physical assets.
Right. Their buildings, equipment, inventory.
I was actually surprised by how detailed those manuals were.
Oh, yeah.
About what's covered under a commercial property insurance policy.
It's very specific.
It goes way beyond just the building itself.
It does, because you have to think about everything. So imagine a fire rips through your office building.
Oh, yeah.
You've got damage to the structure, sure.
Of course.
But what about all the stuff inside?
Right, the furniture, the computers, the inventory.
All of it gone.
All those important documents.
Exactly.
Wow.
So commercial property insurance covers those contents.
Okay.
And even things you might not think about, like outdoor signs or landscaping.
Oh, wow. Yeah, all those hidden costs.
The things you don't always think about.
That can really add up.
They can.
But those manuals also mentioned exclusions, right?
Right.
Things that commercial property insurance doesn't cover.
Every policy has limitations.
Okay.
It's important to know what those are.
Yeah, so you're not surprised later.
Exactly. So with commercial property insurance, things like earthquakes, floods, and certain types of damage from sewer backups,
okay,
those are often excluded.
So if my business is in a flood zone,
yeah,
I would need a separate flood insurance policy.
You would.
Okay.
And sometimes those specialized policies are available through government programs.
Yeah.
So it's always a good idea to talk to your insurance agent.
To figure out what I need.
About your specific location and needs.
It's like building a custom insurance shield.
Yeah, you're layering on protection for the specific risks that you face.
Speaking of things I never knew I needed insurance for.
Okay.
Remember that inland marine insurance?
Oh, yeah. The insurance with the most misleading name.
I'm still chuckling about that.
It's not about boats stuck on land.
No.
So can you remind me what it does cover?
Yeah. Refresh my memory.
So think of it as insurance for anything that's on the move.
Okay.
So it covers goods in transit.
Right.
Which makes it essential for businesses that are involved in shipping and logistics.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it also covers things like mobile equipment.
Okay.
Think construction equipment or those giant cranes you see at construction sites.
Hey.
Even valuable items like artwork or rare musical instruments.
Oh, wow.
If they're being transported for exhibitions or performances,
they
would fall under inland marine coverage.
It's like insurance for nomads.
Yeah. Anything that's constantly on the go.
So it needs that specialized protection.
It does. It faces unique risks.
That makes a lot of sense. What about equipment breakdown insurance?
Okay, equipment breakdown insurance.
When would I need that?
So imagine a critical piece of machinery in your factory suddenly stops working.
Oh, no.
And we're not just talking about the cost of fixing the machine,
right,
but what happens to your production line.
Yeah, everything grinds to a halt.
How much money are you losing every hour?
The downtime can be so costly.
It can be even more costly than the repairs.
Yeah.
So equipment breakdown insurance helps cover those losses.
Okay.
It can also cover things like spoilage of perishable goods.
Oh, right. Like if a refrigeration unit fails.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a safety net for businesses that rely on specialized equipment.
Yeah. It's like insurance for your business's heartbeat.
That's a good way to put it.
Of all the commercial insurance types.
Okay.
The one that always feels the most crucial to me is liability insurance.
It is the big one.
I know it's a huge category.
It is.
But the different types of liability always confuse me.
Okay, well, think of it this way.
Okay.
Liability insurance protects you from financial ruin if you're held legally responsible for harm to others or their property.
Okay.
So this could be anything from a customer slipping and falling in your store.
Right.
To a product you manufacture malfunctioning and causing an injury.
Okay. Yeah, the manuals mention things like premises liability.
Right.
Product liability. Even advertising injury.
Yeah. There are a lot of different types.
It's a lot to keep straight.
It is. Let's break it down.
Okay.
So premises liability.
Yeah.
That covers situations where someone is injured on your property due to negligence.
Okay.
So think a slippery floor, a broken handrail, or even inadequate security leading to an assault.
So if a delivery driver trips on a loose step at my warehouse and breaks a leg, my premises liability would cover that.
It would.
Okay.
And it's not just about covering the medical bills.
Right.
It can also help cover legal costs if you're sued.
Okay. So I'm protected on multiple fronts.
You're mitigating that risk.
Okay. What about product liability?
So product liability.
Yeah.
That's a big one for businesses that manufacture or sell products.
Okay.
This covers situations where a product you sell is defective or dangerous and causes harm to someone.
Oh, that's a scary thought.
It can be a huge liability.
Yeah.
I remember a few years ago, there was a big recall of those hoverboards that kept catching fire.
Oh.
I bet product liability insurance came in handy for those companies.
Yeah. I bet they were glad they had it.
It's a lifesaver when things go wrong with a product.
Okay. And what about advertising injury?
So advertising injury.
Yeah.
That protects you from claims related to your marketing and advertising activities.
Okay.
So think things like libel, slander, copyright infringement.
Okay.
Or even misappropriation of advertising ideas.
So if I accidentally use a copyrighted image in a social media ad.
Right.
And get sued.
Your advertising injury coverage would help.
It's like insurance for my clumsy marketing mistakes.
It can help protect you from those unexpected legal costs.
It's amazing how many potential liabilities businesses face every day.
There are a lot of risks.
Liability insurance seems less like an option and more like a must-have.
It's essential for most businesses.
This whole deep dive is really making me realize how much goes into protecting a business from every angle.
It's about managing risk and protecting your assets.
Yeah, it's like building a fortress of insurance. You're creating layers of protection.
And remember, those manuals also mentioned a bunch of specialized policies for specific risks.
Right. We talked about flood insurance.
Yeah.
Earthquake insurance. Mm-hmm. Crime insurance.
Yeah, it's like there's an insurance policy for every possible disaster.
It seems that way.
And for businesses that rely on vehicles.
Yeah.
Like trucking companies or delivery services.
Right. There's a whole other world of commercial auto insurance to explore.
Okay, I think my brain needs a break from commercial insurance.
I hear you. It's a lot to take in.
It is.
Maybe we should shift gears.
Okay.
And talk about some of the unique types of insurance that don't always get as much attention.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
Let's do that.
All right, so we're back for the final stretch of our insurance deep dive.
That's right, we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, from risk and premiums to the wild world of commercial insurance.
It's been a journey.
It has. But you mentioned some unique types of insurance that we haven't really talked about yet.
So what else is out there in the insurance landscape?
Well, let's talk about surety bonds.
Surety bonds.
Okay. They often get lumped in with insurance.
Yeah.
But they're actually a different beast altogether.
Okay. I'm intrigued. How are they different?
So think of it as a three-way agreement.
Okay.
You've got the principal, who's the party promising to do something.
Okay.
Then there's the obligee, who's the one benefiting from that promise.
Right.
And finally, you have the surety, which is often an insurance company,
okay,
who guarantees that the principal will fulfill their obligation.
So if I'm hiring a contractor to build an addition on my house,
okay,
the contractor would be the principal. I'd be the obligee.
Uh-huh.
And the surety bond would protect me if the contractor, say, runs off with my money or doesn't finish the job.
Exactly. It's a way to add a layer of security and financial protection to a contract.
Okay, so it's like insurance for promises.
That's a good way to think about it.
I never knew that was a thing.
It's a very useful tool.
Okay, let's shift gears and talk about cars.
Right.
Cars. We all know about personal auto insurance.
Right. Everyone's familiar with that.
But these manuals also mention commercial auto insurance.
Yes.
So what's the difference?
The key difference is how the vehicle is used.
Okay.
So if you're using a vehicle primarily for business purposes,
right,
you'll need a commercial auto policy.
Okay.
It covers things like liability for accidents, physical damage to the vehicle, medical payments.
So the same basic stuff as a personal policy.
It covers similar things.
Okay.
But commercial policies often have higher coverage limits.
Okay, why is that?
Because the risks associated with business use are typically higher.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, for example, if you use your personal car to deliver pizzas for your side hustle,
right,
you should probably look into commercial auto insurance.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, anytime you're using your vehicle for an income-generating activity,
yeah,
it's a good idea to talk to your agent.
About whether I need a commercial policy? The manuals mention something about how commercial auto policies classify vehicles using symbols and codes.
They do.
It seemed pretty complicated.
It can be a little bit complex.
Can you break it down for me?
Yeah. So the basic idea is to differentiate between vehicles that are owned by the business.
Right.
Vehicles that are leased or hired.
Right.
And vehicles that are personally owned but used for business purposes.
Okay. So those are three different categories.
Three different categories with different levels of risk.
And that's reflected in the coverage and the premiums.
Exactly.
So those symbols and codes are like a shorthand.
Yeah. It's a way for the insurance company to quickly assess the risk.
Okay. That makes sense. What about businesses where vehicles are more than just transportation? They're like the core of the operation.
Right.
Like a car dealership or an auto repair shop.
That's where garage coverage comes in.
Garage coverage. Okay.
It's a specialized type of commercial auto insurance.
Okay.
For businesses that are well in the business of cars.
Right. They're surrounded by cars all day long.
Yes, exactly.
I remember seeing something called garage keeper's coverage in the manuals.
Yes, garage keeper's coverage.
What does that cover?
So that protects businesses that have custody of customers' vehicles.
Okay.
So imagine you take your car to a repair shop.
Right.
And while it's there, it gets damaged in a fire or stolen.
Oh, no.
Garage keeper's coverage would help cover those losses.
Okay, so that's a relief for both the business and the customer.
Exactly. It provides peace of mind for everyone involved.
No one wants to be responsible for damage to someone else's car.
It's a big liability.
What about businesses that focus solely on transporting goods?
Okay.
Like trucking companies.
So trucking companies have their own set of unique risks.
Okay.
And that's where the trucker's coverage form comes in.
Trucker's coverage form. Okay.
So it covers things like liability for accidents, damage to the truck and trailer, and cargo liability.
Cargo liability with that.
So that protects the company if the goods being transported are damaged or lost.
So if you're hauling a truckload of, say, flat-screen TVs, and they get damaged in transit,
cargo liability would help cover that.
Okay, so it protects the trucking company from a huge financial loss.
Exactly. It's a crucial coverage for those businesses.
It's amazing how every industry seems to have its own specialized insurance.
It's all about tailoring coverage to specific needs and risks.
With all this talk about different types of insurance,
yeah,
it makes me wonder, what about the big picture trends,
okay,
that are shaping the future of insurance?
Right. The insurance industry is always evolving.
Yeah. I mean, things like self-driving cars,
right,
artificial intelligence, climate change.
These are all major factors.
How are insurance companies adapting to all of that?
Well, they're constantly evaluating new risks.
Okay.
And developing new products to address them.
So they're trying to stay ahead of the curve.
They have to in order to remain relevant.
Right.
For example, the rise of cyber attacks.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Has led to a surge in cyber liability insurance for businesses.
Okay, so businesses are protecting themselves against hackers and data breaches.
Exactly. It's a growing concern.
And what about self-driving cars?
As self-driving cars become more common,
yeah,
we're likely to see new insurance models emerge,
okay,
to address the unique risks and liabilities of autonomous vehicles.
So the insurance industry is trying to predict the future.
You know, yes.
At least prepare for all the possibilities.
They have to anticipate change and adapt.
Right.
And it's not just about technology.
Okay.
Climate change is a huge factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're already seeing rising insurance costs in areas that are prone to floods, wildfires, other climate-related disasters.
It's a reminder that insurance isn't just about protecting us from individual accidents.
Right.
It's about managing risk on a much larger scale.
It's about protecting society as a whole.
Well said. Well, this has been an incredible deep dive.
I agree. We've learned a lot.
I feel much more confident about making informed decisions about insurance going forward.
That's the goal.
I hope our listeners do too. And remember, even though insurance can seem complex.
Yeah.
And sometimes even a little daunting.
It can be.
It's ultimately about peace of mind.
That's a good way to put it.
Knowing that you've taken steps to protect yourself and those you care about from the unexpected.
Absolutely.
Until next time, stay curious. Stay informed and stay protected.